thank you for that introduction. What I'm going to really be talking about is a piece of my dissertation that I've been working on that is really trying to answer the question, how are forests in the eastern U.S. going to be responding to climate change? But for the focus of this talk, obviously I'm going to be really trying to hone in on the uncertainty aspect of that and what we think we've learned about that over the last year or two of working on this project. And so I don't think I need to have this slide, but we all know that forests are very important in the global carbon cycle because they're sequestering a lot of anthropogenic CO2 emissions. But what I want to try to justify is why we're looking specifically at the eastern U.S. And so the reason for that is that temperate forests are actually a large percentage of the realized forest carbon sink just because of due to tropical deforestation. And this is especially true in the eastern U.S. So what I'm showing on the right-hand side is a histogram of estimated stand ages in the eastern U.S. And what you can see is that a lot of the stands are very, very young. And so there's a high potential for these forests to be sequestering carbon for maybe as long as 100 years. So again, the big question for me is, how is climate change going to affect this sink? And there's kind of conflicting evidence. There's some suggestion that it could increase the forest carbon sink. There's other evidence that suggests that things like land use change are going to overwhelm any signal that climate will have. But really what I want to say is that there's no, you can say these things, but if you don't have an estimate of uncertainty, there's really no context for these estimates. So we need to have uncertainty when we're talking about inference like that. And again, kind of thinking at this big spatial scale and my overarching question, these are kind of the three aspects of uncertainty that I'm talking about for this presentation, which is first is that plot scale biomass is almost never actually observed. It's derived from these allometric equations that we've heard a lot about today. And I'm not trying to be pedantic with saying that. But the second is that the variability is usually not observed on a scale of interest that you're truly interested in, right? So you often have very small plots, and that's what you're using to derive biomass. And when you're really interested in, say, a hectare scale for biomass uncertainty, or maybe even bigger. And then third is maybe is the fact that biomass itself isn't actually directly responding to climate. So this is going back to the original question. What's happening is that there's these biological organisms, these trees that are in the forest, they're responding to their environment, and then there's ecological interactions between trees that are driving biomass. So the great thing is that we've seen some version of this graph several times today. This is my version. And what I've done is I've thought about all the sources of uncertainty for biomass estimation and put them in a hierarchy of spatial scale, starting from a small scale where you maybe have an individual tree and there's measurement uncertainty involved with that tree, whether you're using DBH tape or remote sensing. The next level in this spatial hierarchy is the fact that if you measure the two trees, they might have the same diameter, but they have different above-ground biomasses, and either that's because of individual variation or allometric allocational uncertainty to above or below-ground biomass. The third one, which we've heard quite a bit about today, is this idea that there's allometric model uncertainty. So all of these are just functions of, for example, diameter. And those parameters in that model themselves have uncertainty, and there's also that epsilon there, which is the individual uncertainty that's listed below. For the questions that I'm asking, the next step is this idea that there's sampling uncertainty. We've heard a lot about this one, too. So what I want to stress here is that there's this heterogeneous forested landscape out there that we're trying to sample with relatively small plots, but the uncertainty associated with that sampling depends not only on the plot size, but their location and the number of them you have. So the sample size isn't enough to say anything about uncertainty there. And then finally, for my question specifically, we often want to make relationships between things like temperature and productivity in forests. But there's this uncertainty that comes from your model methodology and your variable selection, as well as all the other steps in the hierarchy below. That are influencing what the uncertainty is in this estimate. For this talk, really I'm focusing on these top two, but all of the ones in the below are important. So what I wanted to show was this graph from Sugar et al. In 2010, and what they've done is they've taken the forest inventory plots at BCI in Panama, and they've taken them from very small subplots on the left to very large spatially contiguous plots on the right, which are 1 hectare. And what I'm showing here is that for very small plots, you can get pretty much any estimate of above-ground biomass. And it's highly non-normal. It's very right-skewed. And so you really need to be thinking more on the scale of a hectare-sized plot in order to characterize biomass, even for the single stand here. And just to bring it back to the eastern U.S., what I'm showing on the left is the histogram of FIA plot-derived biomasses. And what you see is kind of the exact same thing happens. So these plots are similarly very small. So you get a very non-normal distribution that's highly right-skewed. But ideally, we'd like to be able to use this data because, as you can see from the map on the right, I plotted the location of around the 36,000 FIA plots there in the eastern U.S. And you can see there's a lot of them, and they're very they're distributed all over the eastern U.S. But again, we want to make sure that we don't have to worry about this crazy noise that comes in from these small plots. Thankfully, we just kind of saw the FIA plot design in the last presentation. But if you've never seen it before, this is kind of what it looks like. So there's this standard plot design where in the middle-sized circles is where they're actually measuring the trees that are greater than 12.7 diameter. And if you add up all of these four middle-sized circles, you're going to get an area of about 0.06 hectares. And then each one of these FIA plots represents around 2,400 hectares. So if you want to get a good visualization of what the size of the plot is, it's about the size of a basketball court. If you want to get a sense of what the size of the plot relative to the area it's representing, that scale is, it's kind of like taking the city of Phoenix and trying to use a plot that size to estimate the entirety of North America. So the size, the scale difference is enormous between the size of the plots and the size they represent. So the solution we kind of arrived to for this problem was we have covariates for all these FIA plots, and they're very small. So if what we can do is we can try to combine small plots that have similar characteristics in terms of climate, their stand age, the soil order that the plot lies on, and topography, and cluster them using k-means stratified by soils. And so the advantage of this is you take these 16 small FIA plots, and you kind of create this artificial 1 hectare size plot. And the great thing about this is that all the inference and the uncertainty automatically comes out of the model in the fitted size, which is now 1 hectare scale. And obviously, this is not as good as having real 1 hectare size plots, but hopefully, it's somewhere closer to that than the single FIA plots. So that's kind of our thinking on this, the idea of sampling uncertainty when you're looking at these biogeographical problems. The other issue I mentioned before was the fact that we never see plot-scale biomass. What we see are these three quantities, which instead we want to model using three submodels. So we have a submodel on the far left of how many individual trees there are on a plot, which is connected to a submodel that's is modeling the size distribution of the individuals on that plot. And then there's finally another model that is telling us for every single tree what species group that falls into, and that's important so that we can choose an allometry that makes sense for that species. And those allometries come from the well-published Jenkins equations from 2003. And so once we have these three models, we can kind of combine them and propagate the uncertainty in each of these models to get to our final product, which is hopefully this plot-scale biomass, using the quantities that we actually are observing in the data. So I didn't mention anything about the technical details of this, but this is all a Bayesian statistical modeling framework, which is why I included the picture of Thomas Bayes here. Perhaps I should have, more timely would have been including a picture of Nate Silver from election forecasting fame, because he's also a Bayesian. But what you get from a Bayesian statistical analysis that you don't get from a frequentist statistical analysis is everything that comes out of the model is a distribution rather than an estimate in a confidence interval. So you don't have to worry about doing sort of Monte Carlo propagation, you get all that uncertainty automatically with the modeling fit. And what I'm showing it for is, for a single hectare size plot that I've chosen at random, what's the distribution of the predicted numbers of individuals on that plot? And you can see what that looks like for this plot right there. Likewise, there's that second model where we're estimating the size distribution on this plot, and there's a number of curves that the model is fitting that could fit that particular plot's size distribution, and that's shown there. And you can see there's uncertainty involved with that curve. And then that third model, again, is that model that's telling us what kind of allometry we want to use. And that's what's being shown here. So these are just different allometry groups, species groups. And so, for example, on this plot, the most abundant group is this mixed hardwood species group. And obviously, there's uncertainty involved with all of these proportions. And so now that we have these three submodels and their uncertainty, we can propagate the uncertainty for all three and, in a way, kind of simulate from these distributions the plot scale biomass of this particular plot, which is shown now in the bottom right. And you can see it doesn't have to be normally distributed or anything like that, which is, I think, really powerful because you're not limited to the distribution you're fitting on. Okay, so that is a bit of our modeling approach. The final part of the talk is talking about scaling up to the eastern U.S., and so this slide is kind of the roadmap for that. So what we have done is we fit the model to the one-hectare size FIA data, and then we went into the National Land Cover Database and extracted the 1.4 million forested pixels in the eastern U.S. So on this picture of Wisconsin, those would be the green pixels. And for every single pixel, we extracted all the covariates that we used to fit the models, and then we used those posterior distributions from the model fits to create all the distributions that I just talked about on the previous slide for every single pixel. And then pixels are, given the covariates, are essentially independent, and they're far enough away that you can sum them up to create regional estimates. So this is kind of one such product you might be able to create with this approach, and this is the mean predicted above ground biomass density in tons per hectare for those 1.4 million pixels. And you can see it's the biomass is kind of distributed all over the place, but there's some areas where it's really concentrated. And I've also included, because every pixel has an uncertainty associated with it, and we sum up the individual pixels over different runs, we can also get uncertainty in like the whole map, and I've shown some of those statistics on the right-hand side. Likewise, we can make a prediction of the number of trees that are in the eastern U.S., and because we've included stand age in the model, we also have a prediction of the above-ground biomass sink in petagrams per year. Again, everything is a distribution here, so we can do things like calculate the coefficient of variation from the model predictions. And that can inform us where the model's fitting well or where it's doing poorly. So I don't want to look too much at the exact values here, but what I do want to draw your attention to are these areas of dark blue, which is where the coefficient of variation is high. And you can see that they're on the edges of the map, which is essentially happening because there's not a lot of FIA plots sampling this climate space. And so the model is not so good at predicting the above-ground biomass here, or at least is more uncertain. So these are areas where if we could get more plots, it would be great to get them here. And so to end the talk, I want to talk a little bit about my initial goal of this project was inference about climate change and how that will affect forests. Each of these three submodels I've talked about have very simple parameterizations. They're just linear terms and maybe a few interactions. But when you combine them, you get this mess in terms of the sensitivity of biomass, above ground biomass, to a covariate. You get this kind of nasty looking equation, which is simplified actually, and there's a lot of parameters in the model that are being shown here, and I don't want to talk about this at all, but it's just to say that you need to do this equation many, many times for every pixel, for every covariate, which is not a problem at all for when you have a computing cluster like we've been using at Duke to do this. It just takes some time. And what we're really starting to get down to now is creating maps like this, which are showing from the model fit the sensitivity of above-ground biomass productivity to, for example, a 2 degree C increase in temperature. And what I'm showing here now is in blue regions, there's a positive effect of increasing temperature. In red, there's a negative effect, and there's some yellow, which is showing a non-significant effect because, again, everything is a distribution here. And we see that in the north, this temperature effect is mostly positive, and in the southeast, it's mostly negative. And it kind of concurs with some previous research showing that evergreen conifers could lose out from temperature increases, while deciduous species might benefit a lot from increased warming, because that matches up well with this map. Also, just to say, we don't have to look at this huge scale all the time. There's some really interesting small-scale patterns we can look at. So what I've done is I've extracted on the left the soil map for Wisconsin and Michigan, and on the right I've created the exact same graph I just showed you, but these are the continuous values that were underneath all of the blue, and dark blue areas are where there's a high sensitivity positive effect of temperature, and where it's yellow, that's kind of a small sensitivity. And what I want to draw your attention to in this map is that these pink soils on the left, which are histosols, the model is suggesting that the forests that sit on these histosols are not particularly sensitive to increases in temperature relative to the rest of the soil types. And so there's interesting things all over the map that we're kind of trying to suss out and summarize in a succinct way going forward. So that was probably a lot to go over in like 17 or 18 minutes. But these are the big takeaways that I want to leave everyone with, which is for these biogeographical scale analyses, these small inventory plots are really noisy, and that can complicate biomass estimation because any given plot is telling you probably very little. We've kind of suggested that combining these plots in covariate space using something like k-means is a reasonable approach to not only rein in some of that noisiness, but get your uncertainty and your statistical inference on a scale that you actually care about, which in this case is a hectare scale. And that modeling your observed quantities gives you this very, very nice process-based approach. And doing it in a Bayesian framework, you get to carry around all that uncertainty with you, so you don't have to do any post hoc model fitting kind of procedures. And then kind of going back to the big question is how climate's going to affect the eastern U.S. forests. I think it really just depends so much on local conditions that maps like these hopefully are going to be helpful for policymakers in terms of dealing with climate impacts on forests. So if I time this correctly, I should have a few minutes for questions. Yeah, the CV.
Right, that one there. I'm a little bit surprised that you've identified that area of the aerobic region of northeastern Minnesota, because the FIA program, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, have tripled the sampling intensity. So there are three times as many plots there as there are in the rest of the country. So I'm surprised that you would assert that high uncertainty is due to poor plot coverage. It's a little contradictory, I understand that.
Yeah, so I'd have to check when we downloaded that data. We also have done some specific pruning of the data. So we've only included stands where there is no obvious management. So they're the natural stands, as said in the FIA manual. And we've only included stands that are plots that are fully forested. So it's probably one of those three things that there's just not enough. Maybe I just need to go back and download that new data. Yeah.
The second issue is that given that this is a session on uncertainty, and given that the accuracy of the NLCD forest non-forest classification is only about 0.8, maybe less, did you incorporate the uncertainty of that classification into the overall uncertainty?
Yeah, so the answer is no, though that is something that I think we could do hopefully relatively easily. What we do include is the percent forest cover from those pixels, which itself is uncertain, obviously. So there is that scale of map uncertainty that we're not quantifying, which could be huge, for sure. Really, what I'm interested in is the inference, which I think is, these numbers up here are important to other people, but for me, the real question is the inference on the, you know, looking at how climate's going to affect productivity.
Yeah, but the point is that those inferences are conditional upon the accuracy of the MLCD.
Not necessarily, because the inferences are just coming from FII-fitted data. The maps themselves could be a little wrong, and the aggregation of them could be wrong, but yeah. Yeah, so I'm not going to claim that when you aggregate these small spatially separated plots that you actually are getting really a hectare sized plot. Always be better to get a real hectare sized plot. I would say that part of it is an edge effect. Part of it is that there's only so much space in the plot to sample trees, and so when you get a big tree, all of a sudden there's no space for little trees, or vice versa, is one.
Pretty sure that our next speaker is not here. Raise your hand if you're our next speaker. So if we can afford another question for Brad right now,
perhaps I missed this, Brad, but the when you showed the Wisconsin map and the histosol category coinciding with the sensitivity,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that those are histosols part of the prediction, or is that truly a coincidence in the statistical?
Soil order is a factor in all the models. So there's some combination of the effect of histosols on either the number or the size distribution of trees on FIA plots that's kind of driving this.
So it's in there. It's not the major factor, but it's in there.
Yeah, everything has a chance to affect these maps. And so what I didn't say is that all these maps are standardized to the same stand age, and we have those stand ages, but I've set all of the stand ages to 40 here, which is a relatively young stand, is just so that you can see the effect of the geography rather than the effect of stand age in this map.
Okay.